Okay, I'd like to start off today by going back over some things that I've said before, but which cover basically what we're doing here and why we're doing it. I'm sure, like all the rest of you, I started off in Dianetics and Scientology with the idea of being able to achieve higher states of awareness and getting case gains and being a better person and being able to help others to achieve the same sort of things. And it was very exciting, and after the initial surprise of finding out that such a thing existed, it became more and more exciting, and I became more and more enthusiastic about doing it the more I heard about it. And I'm sure that's true of everybody that's here too. And then there was one thing after another which first of all surprised me that such a thing could happen in Scientology, because it seemed like everything would be ideal. Now, here was this new science or technique which promised great things for man, and so it seemed that everything would be perfect in Scientology. And I guess that was one of my first hidden standards that got shattered, was the idea that everything should, because Scientology was going to help bring about a more ideal scene, that everything that occurred in it should be perfect or should be part of that ideal scene. I guess the first surprise that I had was many years ago, and it was the first time that I'd ever heard of, we've heard recently a lot about SP declares and all that sort of thing, but the first instance of that I ran into was back in the very early 60s. And it wasn't, the term SP hadn't been brought into being as yet, but there were a couple of staff members who'd apparently erred by saying the wrong thing at a staff meeting. And they were declared persona non grata, which I think was the forerunner of the SP declare. And they were declared persona non grata, and it meant they had to leave staff, and none of the staff were allowed to talk to them. And if they did, they weren't really ordered not to talk to them, but they were let know that if they did talk to them, that would probably mean that they were also persona non grata. Anyway, this all seemed very strange and unreal at the time, except that it was happening, and I spent some considerable time trying to figure out how could such a thing happen, you know, why don't they just all get in common with each other and sort it all out. And it appeared that the remarks that they made at the staff meeting hadn't been all that bad anyway. They just made some, I think the org wasn't doing that well at the time, and they'd said something about, you know, they thought there should be more PCs and they should be doing something about getting some more PCs and students, or something to that effect, and it was considered to be hypercritical. So I actually went through a considerable... and then the next thing that happened after that was that some of the staff, I think I was one of them, didn't take it very seriously, and these people that had been declared persona non grata had a tennis court, and we all used to go around there every weekend and play tennis and that sort of thing. And so I figured this persona non grata thing only applied to sort of org stuff. It didn't really apply to tennis. And I and some others went round there the following weekend as usual, and then we found out afterwards that it was supposed to apply to tennis too. Anyway, so I guess I've always had that streak in me. But it started getting very, very serious and heavy, and the next thing that happened is, because people weren't taking it seriously enough, I actually got an order to get these people in and sec-check them to find out if they were members of the Communist Party or if they were involved in some huge criminality or some other such thing that would explain why they were so bad. And I started to... It actually brought about a situation that I think most people have gone through maybe many times, but it made me wonder if the tech worked. And I'm sure everybody has had that thought, although some don't like to admit it particularly. But I started thinking, well, if this technology really works, you know, the way it should do and it's supposed to, then this kind of thing couldn't happen. And that seemed like a very, I thought it out and thought it over quite a lot, and it just seemed to me like this sort of thing could not occur. And I remember going through a couple of black sort of days, wondering about whether the tech worked or not, because otherwise how could such a thing occur? You know, surely people would go and apply ARC or they'd, you know, do something about it. And as I say, I went through a fairly gloomy and black sort of period trying to figure this out. And after I'd sort of gloomed around for a while, and I guess I got tired of being, you know, too downtone, I decided to hell with it and started looking around and noticing things, you know, and I decided to go for a walk and extrovert myself some. And then after a while of doing that, sort of walking along the street, and I was noticing telephone poles and shop windows and various other people and that, and came way uptone, and then kind of realized that I hadn't been too serious about, although it had seemed serious at the time, my worry about whether the tech worked or not hadn't been that serious, because I went off and ran a havingness process and, you know, pulled myself back uptone as a result of it. But unfortunately, that's one of the more serious aspects of some of the antics that have gone on over the years, is that it does cause people to wonder if the tech works. And I guess the remedy is to try a bit of it out and see if it does. Like you could try some havingness, or you could try testing out the ARC triangle on somebody and so on, and see if it raises your ARC for them and that. It's kind of a sad state of affairs that it's come to, that, you know, we have to have little props or things to test it out on, but it's actually happened. And I guess the good part of it is that after having gone through some kind of a trial or tribulation and really questioned whether it works or not, to come out of the other side with the knowledge that, in spite of some seemingly heavy evidence to the contrary, that one has found out with great certainty that it does. So I guess it's the various things that have gone on, there's another explanation for them possibly. The SP declares and the prices and all that. Possibly they were sent by God as trials to test our faith or something. I think it's as good an explanation as any other. Anyway, we've been getting quite a lot of news lately about other centers opening up in various parts of the world, and other people starting to order it again. Locally, there are three people at the moment training as either an auditor or a CS to go back out to another center. Currently at the AAC, we have people from Tucson in Arizona, and from Florida, Fort Lauderdale, and from Mexico. Next week there will be at least one person and probably two people arriving next week from Europe. One of the girls from Europe is coming from Switzerland and will be training up as a CS and going back there. She already has a center operating there. So there's a lot of training going on, and more of it coming up in the near future, which we're very pleased about. So one of the other things that I wanted to mention today, of a more serious nature, or maybe a more spiritual nature, is that the higher one goes in the OT levels, and I mean the higher one actually moves in the OT levels, the less effort and force one needs to use in one's life and daily actions. And reflecting back on the orgs, probably one of the more significant things that happened was in the mid-60s when the Sea Org was created. And up until then, Scientology was running along very much on a disseminate it to other people, tell them about it, get them to get some of it, like whether it was group auditing or whether it was just to get some auditing or some training or go to a PE course or a comm course or whatever, get them to get some of it and try it out for themselves and see if it works, and if they feel it does, they'll go on. And you know, that was the general atmosphere that existed prior to the Sea Org. And amongst staff members and Scientologists, it was pretty much, although there were some odd fallouts from time to time, it was pretty much operated on that NARC type of basis. And when the Sea Org started, it started off with a purpose of getting ethics in. One of the purposes was to get ethics in on the planet, because the planet had been misbehaving badly, I think. Well, it must have been. Anyway, the other thing that happened was that the Sea Org, although it wasn't a stated purpose, at least initially or originally it wasn't a stated purpose to get ethics in on orgs and on staff members and on Scientologists, the Sea Org quickly started to do that. One of the first, you know, very early in the days of the Sea Org, it started getting ethics in on Scientologists and staff members. And part of the earlier, or the early statements that LRH wrote about the Sea Org was that it was supposed to create a safe space in which the fourth dynamic engram could be audited out. And I read that and thought, well, that makes sense. That sounds like a good idea. And then the next thing I saw was somebody in uniform, actually wearing jack boots, running around screaming at some other staff members and so on. And I don't know, it just seemed to be quite different from creating a safe space so that auditing could occur. Apart from anything else, there actually were sessions going on nearby that were being disrupted by this Sea Org officer, you know, bellowing at the top of his lungs. So anyway, it just sort of strikes me as being somewhat contrary to the original purpose of it. But also, the Sea Org was put forward as a sort of OT type org. And I remember a lot of the original Sea Org crew kind of questioning this militant behavior and the sort of harshness with which people were supposed to handle each other. And I remember some of the early explanations among some of the probably less well-informed people there were that it was because it was a more OT org, and so therefore people, officers and so on in the Sea Org operated with more force because they had a higher confront. But it's actually the reverse. You know, the higher a person's confront is and the more OT a person is, it's actually the reverse. It's the less force and effort that the person uses. Force and effort, you know, observedly increase the further downtone one goes, and the further upscale one goes, the less force and effort. And as one goes up the OT levels, things like postulates and considerations seem to have an awful lot more to do with what happens than any amount of force or effort. And I think because the Sea Org got into this very heavy force and effort type thing, it actually held everything back, or held Scientology back from expanding and progressing, or if not, like when there was a period of expansion, then they'd send a mission in to handle it, and they usually did. And I had a personal thing happen just recently. I was, which I thought was what brought it, it's actually the thing that brought it to mind as far as I was concerned about less force and effort, was that after a session I did the other week, and occasionally I pick up the cans when there's time and so on, but I'd walk into a room where somebody was there, and very often I just started, this new thing started of just simply knowing what was going on or what the person was about to say or about to do or whatever. And remembered reflecting on how it was totally effortless. In fact, by putting any, if I put any effort on to repeating it afterwards, it happened to a lesser degree, and I thought that was very amusing. So I guess if you, I guess it's possible to control these things if you start getting, if you start making gains or cogs in your auditing that are, that get scary to you because you think you might be progressing faster than what you can easily have or something, or if you startle yourself sometime, there's, I've got the safe answer to that. You could sort of mock yourself up in a uniform and kind of put a time machine order on it or something, and it'll cool it off. Anyway, as far as the as far as we're concerned here at the AAC, we're real happy about the way things are rolling along, and seems to be very successful, and it does seem to be awfully effortless. Somebody asked me today, this afternoon, what kind of promo we send out, and whether we, you know, whether we do a promotional push on a certain service or certain services from time to time. And remember, I answered the question, which is that we, the only thing really that we put out is the journal, and we haven't gone into doing something like doing a big promotional campaign on getting your grades or the fact that the planet is going to end next week. No, it's the week after next, sorry. But we don't do that kind of stuff, and we haven't. And it sort of struck me as odd, the idea, you know, just the idea of, hey, maybe we should have all these promo pieces going out. It just sort of struck me as being quite funny. And it certainly saves a lot of saliva because you don't have to stick all those bulk mailings. But I figure that if it, you know, if it is, if what you're doing is successful, then it should spread and it should expand. And if it doesn't of its own accord, then you'd have to work at it to try and get people in and get them regged and promote to them about why they should take the next step and why they should pay today instead of next week and all that sort of thing. It would be a lot of work. And I don't think it would be worthwhile. I don't think it would be worth doing it if it was that hard. But I think the reason why it is that hard is because they do that sort of thing. You know, if you start promoting heavily to people about why they should get their grades when they already want their grades, or why they should get trained when, you know, they're trying to work out how they can get a training course, then it does become a lot of effort. It becomes a lot of effort for the staff doing that, and it becomes a lot of effort for the public receiving it, and people who want to go up the bridge are always having to explain to somebody else about how, yes, they do want to go up the bridge, and wouldn't they, you know, do something about the prices or whatever so as to make it more possible, and it gets into this whole crazy sort of a childlike argument, actually, if you look at it, if you get somewhat exterior to it. And if it isn't so serious, it becomes quite absurd, really. Can you imagine the number of phone calls that go on around the hour of midnight or whatever on Wednesday nights? It's incredible. And all those promo mailings and so on and so forth. It's amazing. But anyway, I think the main thing is that it shouldn't be all that much work. And I think if people didn't put as much work into it, it would probably turn out to be easier. Or it would have been easier in the first place, and so on. So I guess the moral of this is if you just stop doing all the things that are hard work or a lot of effort and force, you know, you might find that things ran along a lot more smoothly and a lot more easily anyway. And that's what seems to be happening. When we started off the AAC, we really honestly didn't know that we would be having an anniversary. And I remember one of the main questions that people used to ask us in those days, it was not the only one, but one of the main questions people used to ask us back then was, it's all very well that you're making these services available, but how do I know that you'll be here in a few months' time, or that you'll be here later on? And they were afraid that, you know, they might come and get some auditing from us and that we might disappear. And then, you know, the church would say, now you can't come back, and yet the AAC's gone and everybody else is gone. And the ferocious people keeping Scientology working would have stamped out all the friendly furry people. And so on, and everyone would be left high and dry. And it's only 2 weeks away now, and it looks like we are going to be here at least for 1 year. And it's been a pretty good year. It hasn't taken a hell of a lot of anything specially great. People often thank us for having done it and for having made it possible. And, you know, it's appreciated, but of course it's all you people and people like you that make it possible. But really, it wasn't that difficult. The only real things that we had to do were to stop doing a whole bunch of things that we'd been taught to do, or convinced that you ought to do, like order people to do things that they were trying to do anyway, and so on. And I guess that's the winning formula. Sometimes people have asked us, you know, about what are our successful actions, and I guess the might sound somewhat more embarrassing, but it's more our successful inactions. Anyway, I guess that's really about it.